Greetings, everyone. This is Eric Andelin, the Senior Workflow Specialist with SimActive, and I wanted to introduce you to our first podcast, Pixels and Points. In this podcast, we will discuss with our peers in the profession all things related to mapping. So in this first podcast, we're going to talk about workflows and processing corridors with not only UAS imagery, but large format aircraft and what those challenges might be. And my guest is Carlos Prieto with ServTech. Carlos, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Carlos Prieto. I am with ServTech Solutions. I am currently the Vice President of Program Management. And ServTech Solutions is headquartered in Tampa, Florida. We started as a purely survey company back in 2004, and over the years have evolved to a full-blown geospatial company. We have a range of different services, everything geospatial. We collect and map just about every feature there's out there. We can do mapping from basically from the air, on the ground, underwater, underground. So, you know, it's several different combinations. We have airborne capabilities with LiDAR and imagery. We do a lot of, you know, large scale collection supporting different federal outfits, USGS, the Corps of Engineers, NOAA, and so forth. And then, you know, we have UAV capacity, both LiDAR and image. We do, you know, a lot of different types of collection, smaller size, medium, large, a lot of utility corridors. On the bathymetric side, we do a lot of acoustic collection, underground utility surveys, ground penetrating radar, electric resistivity, and so forth. We do a lot of indoor scanning as well. One of our youngest department is what's known as metrology. And metrology is the ability to measure within 10,000 of an inch. We do a lot of bridge alignments and that type of work. So in a nutshell, that's who we are. We have several offices throughout the Southeast. We have 13 states that we have PLS coverage throughout the Southeast. So we're a fairly young company, around 100 employees or so, but we're still a small company. And, you know, we're agile and nimble, you know, to be able to deploy just about anywhere where the work is needed.
Yeah, and for the people listening, I've known ServTech for quite a long time. I've known Ken and Carlos and David, great folks, always working with the latest, greatest technology. So I'm really happy to have you guys on board. You guys are SimActive users. That's one of the tools in your toolbox for processing. What we're really here to talk about today is what you guys are doing with drones, what you guys are doing with imagery, drone-based LiDAR, and how these apply to the projects that you guys are working on. I know you guys work with full-size cameras as well. I don't know, I can't remember if you guys actually own any or if you just subcontract that work out. How's that go?
We do. So we own an Optic Galaxy D2000, and it has an incorporated phase one metric camera, the IRIS 1000. So we can do concurrent collection of both elevation data and imagery.
Yeah, let's talk about the phase one for just a minute, because maybe some of our listeners don't know. We tend to have folks that work on the drone spectrum, and we have folks that work on the large format. But something that's really taken off in the last, I'd say, 2-3 years are the medium format cameras, and phase one really puts out a good product. And when you mate that with a LiDAR system, then you now have the ability to do point cloud colorization and so forth. And what are your thoughts on the phase one systems?
Well, it has worked very well for us. And like I say, it's a metric camera, and you know, it has calibration. So, you know, you can do, you know, mapping out of a stereo compilation, can do, you know, ortho imagery. And again, the ability to collect concurrent image and LiDAR data, it's a huge benefit for a lot of our customers, especially in the utility corridors where, you know, imagery and elevation data is much more needed nowadays. Phase one is a high quality camera. It can be mounted on airplanes, it can be mounted on drones. So, you know, there's a lot of flexibility on that.
Yeah. A side note, I actually was working with someone yesterday on phase one data, and I commented to him afterwards. All he's doing is collecting imagery and mapping from it. But I commented to him afterwards, I have never seen a data set come in with IMU, AT, and just hit perfectly. It took no effort on our end on the processing side or on his end as I was showing him to do that. So I'm really impressed with the phase ones. And another thing you mentioned was the ability of the MID formats to still be used for stereo photogrammetry. Again, in the drone world, there's not much going on in stereo photogrammetry. And part of that is because the footprint of the image is so small that to transition from one stereo model to the next is just, it's painful on the operator to work with that data. The phase one is MID formats. You have a much bigger footprint, you cover a large area, and it makes it a more feasible option. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. In fact, I mean, there's a lot of cameras up for every use. We find the phase one pair with the P2000 to have a very similar footprint. So, you know, you don't have to sacrifice one or the other when you're doing, you know, collection of both. On the stereo compilation side, yeah, it's a medium format camera. You have to understand and embrace the limitations of the technology. But for what we do, you know, it works really well. You can do planimetric mapping, you can do topographic mapping. Although, you know, if you're collecting elevation data with LiDAR, you know, then there's no need to collect the, right, you know, to use the imagery. But, you know, you have that extra layer of data that, you know, helps you in your point classification. And if you have to do mapping, if you have to do any kind of feature extraction, it's a well-known, proven platform for photogrammetric mapping.
Yeah. Yep. So before I get too far down this road, I just wanted to make sure that folks know that what we're going to discuss are some of the things that we can do to help facilitate creating the deliverables from these systems, the phase ones, the drones, the LiDAR systems. What we're going to talk about is specific to utilities in this case, the challenges with setting up projects for utility mapping. We'll go over some of the processing tools, and we'll also look at maybe some of the batch editing and scripting tools that can help you get to your desired deliverables using correlated 3D or, you know, in fact, anything else if that's what you're using. And again, our software is only a piece of the pie because, you know, you need processing software for LiDAR, you need processing software for your survey data, all of that. So we're going to talk about that. Before we get down that road, I know you also have a handful of drones with you. Can you describe what you guys have, what you're using them for?
Yeah, sure. And by the way, I personally have been using Correlator 3D for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. So I'm well acquainted. I have seen the evolution of the software, and you know, I'm pleased with the latest updates. But yeah, we have an array of UAVs from copters to you know, vertical takeoff, you know, fixed wing. They are equipped with either LiDAR or imagery. Our latest image UAV is the Wingcraft 1, the Generation 2, and it has a 42 megapixel Sony camera. It has a very good endurance. It's a very stable platform. You know, it can stay up in the air for a considerable amount of time. You can cover a lot of ground in a single mission. And the resolution of the camera is such that, you know, even at 400 feet, which is the maximum allowed for UAV flying, you know, you still get under a couple of centimeter pixels. Right. So very high resolution imagery capture, with that platform.
And I also saw you guys have a Harris system.
We do. So we have the heavy lift, the H6, which is a hybrid electric gas powered. That handles both our LiDAR payloads. We have a Velodyne 32, and we also have a Regal Vox 1. It handles either one of them very well. It stays up in the air for about 90 minutes, so you know you get a lot of collection in a single mission. We like that. We also have we have a couple of the DJI 600s that we may be retiring soon. We just acquired the newest Harris, the HX8, as a matter of fact. So that's an electric drone, can handle the lighter payload with about 30 minutes endurance, pretty much doubles the DJI endurance. So that one is working very well, you know, with our UAV crews.
That's fantastic. And I assume, you know, when you guys are looking at these systems, and I agree, the Wingtra is just a fantastic, it's a workhorse. And in the Harris systems, I don't think you can beat them for heavy lift. The gas electric one kind of sounds like a belief blower in the air. You can't sneak up on anybody. But the electric one, yeah, it's pretty quiet. And you're right, it does at least double what the DJI system does, carrying such a large payload. So that's,
you're right. It makes a lot of noise, and you know, we've had residents come out and you know, try to figure out, you know, what we're doing out there with that, you know, flying weed whacker that type of questioning. So, but it is a workhorse, and again, it handles the heavy payload of the lighter units very well.
So let's dip in. I know your background is survey and photogrammetry, so is mine. I just went a little bit more towards photogrammetry when I realized I could go inside and not spend my days outside.
To tell you the truth, I come from a stereo compilation background.
There you go.
Analytical. So, I mean, it spent a lot of time, you know, looking into stereo images, extracting features. So I know very well what you're talking about.
The good old days of stereo photogrammetry. And yeah, those are certainly, that's much better than standing out in the Florida swamps with a rod, at least in my opinion. But so let's talk a little bit about what you guys are doing. So you guys are doing some utility corridor mapping. Is this typically for vegetation obstruction stuff? Is it for new projects? You know, I mean,
it's a variety. Some of it is new projects. Some of it is just asset management.
Yeah.
Some of it is they may want to add another line to the existing corridor. Vegetation management, you know, with collecting the imagery and the LiDAR, you know, the point cloud allows you to see, you know, overhanging vegetation and run some pretty sophisticated analysis on you know, what type of intrusion you're having with vegetation into your existing corridor. You know, you can digitize, you can see individual lines, infrastructure, buildings, and you know, water bodies, you know, all, you name it.
Yep. And from an acquisition standpoint for folks, there is a difference between what you're doing when you're setting up a project where you're doing land development, and it's 600 acres and it's kind of a square shape. You can target it a certain way. You can set your project up a certain way. But when you're dealing with corridors, and I'm not even talking just about utility corridors, but also roadways, there are requirements to setting up your project so that your processing software can properly create the AT, match the targets, and so forth. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so all of our flight planning is done in Topo Flight, just because we've been doing LiDAR since, our team has been doing LiDAR since the late 90s when the first commercial, you know, LiDAR sensors came in the market. So we've been in the market for quite a while. We know what LiDAR data needs to look like. We know how it needs to be processed. We've gone through the entire gamma of challenges and have resolved it. The flight planning is actually one of the most important things that you can do. You determine, you know, the accessibility, you know, how close your flight lines need to be.
Right.
You have to know your sensor to know, you know, what the sweet spot is. You know, is it 30% side lap? You know, is it 40%? You know, what works best? And then if you're adding imagery to it, if you're adding concurrent imagery, you know, it adds, you know, another complicating factor. If you decide to do a separate mission for imagery, it's a little bit easier, but you still need to, you know, consider, you know, line of sight if you're using UAV technology, you know, how high you can go, obstructions and that sort of thing. So, you know, mission planning is critical to the success of the, you know, of the project. You know, lines are drawn, and we tend to, especially in corridors, you know, where there's a, you know, different shapes and they meander here and there, you know, we tend to kind of block things up just because it provides a much stronger solution when you're calibrating your data or when you do an aerial triangulation for feature extraction or ortho imagery.
Yeah, and it's important with utilities, but it's more important on road projects if you're working with a drone. Obviously, you're not supposed to be flying over the road. So you want to run parallel on both sides, so you've got at least two flight lines. You need more than that. I think sometimes some errors that we see in the drone world is that they think that, you know, just a couple of flight lines will do. And what you need is that network of tie points. So you need multiple flight lines through your corridor, more so important in the drone world, but in the medium format and then in a large format, if you're not doing stereo photogrammetry and you're relying on a tight AT solution for structure for motion, you need quite a few flight lines.
Yeah, and you know, we find ourselves, you know, controlling, you know, each block or each job in very much the same way, you know, regardless of whether there's going to be compilation or there's going to be, you know, other products, because oftentimes you acquire a data set and the client keeps coming back saying, hey, by the way, can we do this with this data set, or can we do that?
Yeah.
So, you know, nowadays getting control is really not all that expensive. I mean, you're already on site. Our crews, our UAV crews and our, you know, airborne crews are both equipped with GPS technology. They know how to set control and that sort of thing. So, you know, we treat every project, you know, with that kind of precision and accuracy in mind. I said earlier that, you know, we're a full, you know, blown geospatial company, but we're still surveyors at heart. And by that I mean we treat every job, you know, with the same care and the same pursuit for accuracy, you know, as we do any other job. And that includes, you know, setting a good density of control points that will ensure not only that you have success, but you can prove to the client, you know, your product meets the accuracy desired.
Yeah, to that point, you know, proof is not just an accuracy report from your software. I mean, you have to be able to back it up. And a lot of times, you know, people may not understand that, or they may want to just hand the report to someone and say, well, this says it's good. And that may not be enough to make your client happy. So you have to be aware of that.
Well, you know, mapping standards make it clear that you have to have independent checks. I know a lot of the technology is very good now. A lot of the platforms and software, you know, you can do mapping without control. We don't do that. We don't advocate that. And again, you know, setting control is not all that difficult anymore. So, you know, we typically will collect an independent group of points, checkpoints, that you can verify the accuracy of the data, you can report against it, and then, you know, we've had success doing that.
Yeah, I always tell folks, at a minimum, you want control for this reason. If your IMU fails, if you're in the drone world, if you're not capturing that data and you just assume that RTK or PPK is the answer, how are you going to know if you don't have checkpoints? You just don't. So you have to be aware of that. And to that point, folks may not be aware that when you're doing corridor work for, say, the DOT, they typically have control guidelines that you have to adhere to, or at least have some kind of proof that you can do something different and they'll accept it. And a lot of times that comes from old large format photogrammetry projects, you know, ASPRO standards, or it comes from new mobile LiDAR standards. So you have to take those things into account when you're doing corridor work.
Absolutely. Mapping standards will dictate for whoever you're working for, USGS or the Corps of Engineers or the DOT, their mapping standards will dictate how the data needs to be assessed for accuracy. Yep. And that includes having independent control points.
Yep, very good.
One more thing before I forget. The ASPRS mapping standards dictate that your control has to be 3 times more accurate than the desired accuracy of your data set. So, yes. That's a very important point because, those last centimeters of accuracy will cost you a lot of money if your client is interested in having super accurate data. You're within 10 centimeters, 5 centimeters, even a couple of centimeters, RTK technology would be fine for control points. But if you want to go more accurate than that, then you start talking about leveling techniques and that, can increase your budget exponentially.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I had that conversation with a customer the other day. We're talking about error. You've got your error in your control, which if it's leveled through, it's very little. If it's GPS, there's some error there. Then you've got your error from the AT. You've got your error from the DSM that was created from the AT. So all of those things stack up. And you have to be aware of that, So it scares me sometimes when I see somebody say, I was accurate to this. I'm like, that's going to be a hard one to validate.
And granted, some of the regulations are a little bit fuzzy. There's a lot of room for interpretation. We hold, PLS licenses, in 13 states.
Yeah.
And so we're very mindful about how we go about, setting control and setting elevation data or image data. We guard that very, very carefully because if you're not doing it correctly, it could come back and bite you. And as big as this country is, this industry is very small and everybody knows what you're doing. So, we're very mindful about, following proper procedures.
So we have two sensors that we're primarily working with these days, RGB sensors or image-based sensors, and we have LiDAR sensors. And we are now to the point where we are merging those two technologies so that we're reaping the best of both worlds from each of them. And honestly, with the advent of medium format cameras, with the advent of drones, in the old days when you had a large format system, to put a LiDAR unit and a camera in that aircraft, and then to deal with the flight lines based on maybe the focal length of the camera or the LiDAR unit created all kinds of challenges. And it's fairly costly. When we go to medium format, now we can start adjusting things in the flying heights so that the two are closer in unison. And then we can even drop down, like you said, again, to say drones, where we can fly two at the same time and collect the information. So it's made things easier for us to work with both data sets. And in Corollary 3D, we can bring in the point cloud data, we can put that with the imagery, we can use the surface from the point cloud data, or we can create the surface from the imagery. We can do a lot of things to merge these data sets together. And more recently, the ability to do the point cloud colorization. So can you talk a little bit about the benefits of each and what the value is when we combine them to create products?
So elevation data is so valuable nowadays, and it could be used, for a variety of different projects. Image data is also valuable. The visual impact, the ability to record features on the ground,
yes.
At the time they were collected. I mean, it's just a permanent record. Combine the two together, the value of the data set just increases exponentially. Now you can use your LiDAR elevation data to rectify your imagery. You can use your imagery to aid in the classification, in the proper classification of your LiDAR data. You can use the RGB values from the imagery to colorize your point cloud. And these are all things that can be achieved, you know, through a variety of different softwares, but it can also be achieved in Correlator 3D. I like that ability. I like having that quick access in a single platform. Oftentimes, we bring in the elevation data, produce a quick DEM or, you know, filter the data in Correlator 3D just to produce a suitable, elevation model for ortho rectification. So, merging the two data sets together, yes, you're absolutely right, increases the value of the data exponentially.
And to that point, we bring in processed point clouds. We don't correct point clouds. We don't do anything like that. There is software that is best used for that. And that software may do some of the same things that we do. So there's a little bit of overlap, which is fine. But when your company is running through different LiDAR data sets, be it terrestrial, be it mobile, be it airborne, you know, that software may be better used for that purpose. Whereas we're an image processing software. So on our end, we may be able to relieve some of your congestion on your LiDAR processing software by doing some of these steps in here, and vice versa. We don't do planimetric mapping. Planimetrics are better done in your CAD software or whatever else you're doing. So, you know, talk a little bit about what kind of software you guys are using to process LiDAR data.
Yeah, so we use strict guidelines and workflows to collect, calibrate, and process, you know, LiDAR data. We use, you know, the TerraSolid suite of software. That's where we do it. You know, once it's calibrated, then that, you know, that point cloud can be shared in Correlator 3D, be able to produce, surfaces for ortho rectification. An ortho rectification software surface is, it's a lot more forgiving than a true point cloud that is going to be used for, you know, contour generation or any other, you know, elevation products. So yes, we still keep full control over our LiDAR data in the TerraSolid environment. Once we're happy with, we achieve a strong calibrated point cloud, then we can share it with Correlator 3D for further processing, for further analysis, or for ortho rectification.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, is to share it with this software package to go ahead and produce additional deliverables. So now we've added a few things. We just had an update a few weeks ago, and the one thing that excites me the most is the email notification. I love the fact that now when our users are processing data, they can literally just put their email address in there and it'll shoot you an email, you know, because you're processing stuff 24/7. Overnight, you know, you might kick off something at 5 p.m., and in large projects, you may get an email at 10 p.m. saying that the DSM is done or the ortho rectification is done. And I kind of like that feature. We've added a couple more. Originally, we could import one LAS or LAZ file, which required, the client to merge all of their LiDAR data into one cloud. Right. Which can be really big, depending on your project, and then bring that into Correlator 3D, do our work with it, do the colorization. We have now added the ability to load multiple LAS files, so you don't have to merge it together on your end, if you wish. And then you can do the colorization the same way through a batch routine that just basically loops through the software and then colorizes each of those individual point clouds. And I don't, Carlos, I don't know if you have dug your hands into that. It may be more of your production team.
Well, like I said, I've been using Correlator 3D for the last 10 years, so I'm happy to see the improvements over time. The email function, thumbs up for that, because a lot of the projects are smaller projects, you know, a few hundred frames here and there, but, you know, we run projects with, you know, thousands of frames. You know, just last month, we ran one with, you know, 4,500 frames. So, you know, it takes a lot of time, and the ability to be notified when some of these processes and they're ready for the next step, you know, regardless of where you are, you know, with the email feature. Now, the ability to bring multiple LiDAR files into Corellego 3D, I'll give you two thumbs up for that, because you're absolutely right. You, and the majority of the larger LiDAR projects are outputted into tiles. So, you know, you are having to output tiles from TerraSolid, from TerraScan or any other software. And then, you know, before last month, you know, you had to kind of find a way to put it together, upload it. Now, I mean, you just go select all your files there. You know, that's a great advantage.
Yep. And to do that, to import them in is not a problem. To create the surface is not a problem. Creating the intensity image, which you can then use for, you know, for some of your control. All those things are straightforward and very easy to do. The colorization of individual LAS files takes a little bit of work. It's a little bit of scripting, which we're more than happy to share. But more importantly, it goes back to what I tell people all the time when they are new to this. Create a directory structure that you're going to work with. Stay with that structure. Make it homogeneous to all your projects. And in the case of some of these scripting routines, think about those and make it simple for you to write these scripts. So your tile names, your file names, all of those things, consider them ahead of time, because they will create roadblocks in some cases. So people need to be aware of that when they do some of these scripting routines.
They can make and by the way, I mean, this scripting has been, you know, with Corellego 3D for since the beginning, I believe. And I'm particularly fond of that. I'm a little bit old school, and you know, writing scripts, simple scripts, you know, DAW scripts, and I say DAWs, and a lot of people don't even know what I'm talking about, but I know that capability has been in there, and we use it pretty often, especially when we have projects that are very similar, or, you know, when we're running processes that are redundant. You know, you may have one flavor of a project that has maybe, you know, 10 different sites. You know, you can script that that together, and, you know, do a lot of the processing unattended. You know, great feature.
Absolutely, and even, you know, for those people that are doing, say, quarries or things like that, where every month they're going out and doing the same thing, write a script. You know, and then point it to the folder where the new imagery is, and just and let it do its job. Make life easier on yourself.
Let me stop things here for just a second. This podcast was produced along with a webinar recording. You can go to our website, simactive.com, and there is a page that includes the webinar recordings in our learning section. So we'll have a visual portion to this podcast, which we'll actually go through and demonstrate some of the activities that Carlos and I have been talking about. Again, that's simactive.com, under Learning, Webinars and Recordings. Here you'll find our webinars, you'll find our podcasts, ultimately, anything in our knowledge base, tutorials, and so forth. In concluding the podcast portion, I'd like to thank Carlos Prieto with ServTech Solutions. You can find out more about ServTech Solutions at their website, servtechsolutions.com. Also, please remember to follow us on social media, and if you enjoyed this podcast, share it with others. Thank you.